Morning, Jackie.
Morning, Patty.
So we've just had a conversation and we thought we might have a discussion this morning about relational patterns. And I thought, Jack, you might want to start off. So when you think about relational patterns, what are you thinking?
I'm just curious about relational patterns and how we configure ourselves and the narratives that we then develop based on what we find easy or difficult, or what we see others as finding easy or difficult. And I'm just curious about it.
Go on, say a bit more. What, where do you see it coming up in your practice or experience, life experience?
Okay, so what I see is that say a parent might say they've always struggled in this area. So when we talk about their relational pattern together, it's really clear that the parent responds in a particular way, which kind of feeds into the relational pattern that the child is stuck in. So I'm not saying that there aren't difficulties initially, and there isn't some underlying difficulties, but there's something about how we then configure ourselves and respond to that gap, the developmental gap. That can then feed into it, and then it becomes a narrative and a story that becomes a fixed pattern rather than, okay, this is an area that I really need to focus on because they have got very little skill in this area, or they have got a neurodiversity and I need to really strengthen this skill, or so it's just the relational patterns and the narratives that then form.
Because as you were talking, I was thinking about the sort of some of the underlying theory, which obviously really interests me. But people used to think that the brain was quite fixed when we were born, and then it we kind of went through our life, and then nothing much changed. But actually, what the science shows is that our brain is being formed in relationships. So from the point of conception, actually, our brains are being impacted by our experiences, and then when we're born, they're being informed by how we're responded to. So we're in this really dynamic process whereby what we do and how people respond to us shapes the way our brains develop. So as you say, we might have some underlying differences or unique biology, let's say, in terms of how we respond to the world. But nonetheless, one of the big things that influences us is the way we are experiencing ourselves in relationship. And that is really interesting because it starts small, and then little differences can become really sort of quite fixed by the way in which people relate to us. I think that's what you're describing. When they say they've always been like that, it feels like the pattern has been fixed of the way specific incidents play out. Is that what you're referring to?
And then I was just thinking about how our attention then goes on this person's gap or their difficulty, and we don't really pay any attention to how we respond or how we contribute to that, I want to say, because I'm thinking of say if I'm around somebody who's particularly I don't know, not particularly robust. I know that I will adjust how I respond to them and I speak to them, but I still hold them accountable. But I will change my delivery style. If I'm around someone who's more robust and really assertive, I will change my delivery style. I can be more direct and upfront with them. But again, the underlying theme for me is that I will still be holding them accountable, holding my boundaries, and being the essence of me, regardless.
Yeah, I was thinking because I mean you've done a lot of thinking about this. I mean, in terms of, I think we do adjust our styles according to how other people are relating to us, but whether we do it consciously or sort of unconsciously is quite different. I feel to me, one of the essence of becoming more mature is that we can start to see it more self-aware, let's say, start to see what's happening and start to adjust our processes. But we might be doing it unconsciously before that. And certainly,
Yeah,
when we're
totally.
caring for a a young person or vulnerable adult who has got some underlying needs, then actually our self-awareness is one of the real strengths that we can bring that makes can turn a difficult situation into an easier situation, because we can start to think, oh, that's what I have always done, and actually perhaps I could change it now. And that the other thing I was thinking, Jackie, is just to go back a couple of things. You said something about people focusing on the child. We see that a lot, don't we? When people come asking for help, they're very focused on being very concerned about the child, and they've often missed their own piece. That's why we call it I Matter, really. It's to help direct their attention to their own contribution to this that you're describing.
And it's not just the child, it's the adult. This same pattern it happens in adult to adult. It's not just
Yes,
parent to
for
child.
sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and we
I
can,
agree.
it's we sometimes there's another expression that says a state becomes a trait. So if we constantly react in a certain way to a certain person, we practice that pattern, it can become quite fixed. I don't think it's ever permanently fixed, but it can feel more fixed. It can feel more challenging to move it on. So we have to be much more aware and conscious of what we're going to be actually bringing in into the situation.
And there's something about again, I going back to identity. I always end up here somehow, but there's something about we then see ourselves as really caring or empathic because we respond to them in a particular way. And I'm not saying that we're not caring and empathic, but sometimes that is born out of our need to be seen in that way. Because if we did put a stronger boundary in or said no, then we likely wouldn't be liked as much in that moment. And that's hard to manage when you are used to being liked and seen as caring and kind.
So I was thinking another common pattern we see would be a child is struggling and an adult is really wanting to support them and can see that they get upset and see they get distressed and therefore makes accommodations because they're thinking that they can't manage it. But sometimes the accommodations actually end up enabling a problem and enabling them staying a bit stuck. Whereas what we want the adult to do is recognize the child is struggling, but still enable the child to take the next steps in their development through a sort of compassionate approach, but not a kind of pushover approach. So they actually need more skilled, and when we call it advanced skills parenting, it is more advanced because you've got to be more thoughtful about how you move those skills on and how you use your boundaries and when you say no and how you can tolerate it when they're not very happy with you, perhaps pushing them in to trying something perhaps they don't really want to do.
And being mindful of the messages that you give to them if you don't engage with that process, because I'm thinking if somebody is treated with kid gloves, they will think that there's, that they're fragile or that it's not their fault or there's something wrong with them. And it's really important to be mindful of how you communicate to avoid giving that message.
It's complicated stuff, but super interesting, isn't it? I think we should try and keep these recordings a little bit short so they're pithy. So, should we stop it now and then pick up the conversation? Another one. All right. Thanks, Jack.